You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Daniel Foster. Daniel, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
Daniel, we're talking on February 3rd in 2021. We're still in the pandemic, of course, and you're in Palm Springs. Can you tell me give me a snapshot of your studio, where you are at the moment?
Well, I'm actually up in an area called Pinyon Crest at 4,000 elevation overlooking the Coachella Valley that includes Palm Springs. And so I have a home and art studio that has 100-mile views looking east to Arizona and is at the intersection of desert, Joshua Tree kind of desert with mountain communities and a pinyon pine ancient forest. I've lived here for about 4 years now, coming in from San Diego and earlier times of my life, almost all in Southern California, other than art school years in San Francisco.
And how is COVID affecting that area, that remote area?
Well, it's a snowbird area with a slightly elderly population, so it's hit pretty heavily, as is Southern California. Living up in nature on 2.5 acres, surrounded by nature, I feel very isolated, and it fits my personality and lifestyle as a divorced father of a 10-year-old that I'm raising up here also, and pursuing my own art and poetry, but also my engagement with the arts community and kind of community activism around the arts.
So let's talk about some of that, because you're in a number of different spheres in the art world. To begin with, your own art, you've traveled an unusual path. Can you tell me a little bit about perhaps what
you're working on now? I'm classically trained Southern California native, father from Boston, MIT, Harvard background, Minnesota homemaker, mother, oldest of two boys that grew up in Southern California, had lots of opportunity in my generation for professional paths, studied at UC San Diego in their art department, but philosophy major, and then made a diametrically opposite move to a USC business school and got a master's degree in entrepreneurship, and then ultimately discovered the artist inside me unexpectedly in my mid-20s and completely changed my life head to toe, every aspect of my life from that epiphany experience of making art and discovering the inner voice and creative spirit that lived deep inside me that had been muted for most of my childhood and my college years. So from mid-20s to now late in career, in my early 60s, I've had a pretty alternative, unorthodox journey of pursuing art and poetry in almost complete isolation, intentionally abstaining from commercial marketplace careerist considerations, and very happy looking back on how my freedom of movement.
So let me just ask you that. If you have abstained mm-hmm. from that, which is a path, you know, other artists take, and I'm glad we're talking about this, how does the art get out into the world, or does it? Do other people see it? And if so, how?
Well, I have a long run view, hopefully to live 100 years, and that you have time and patience, and there are stages and chapters of life that are right at the right time and place, and to be forever patient and allowing the next chapter and journey and evolution of my art or my path to unveil itself. When I ventured into that direction, having come from very compromising philosophies in my early 20s that I was dealing with, I decided to go what I called a purist path, which is to go completely 100% internal, to uncover my own vocabulary, iconography, material approach, and to evolve organically and in the now, and have confidence that in a few years, things will mature and start to evolve and maybe manifest, but to not put it on a timeline. And short story on that is that I ended up going almost 20 years in isolation, making full-time bodies of work that seemed to change every 18 months to new kinds of approaches and expressions. And then I had another epiphany in my later 40s that brought me into careers in the arts, like running. Twice I've run art museums, regional nonprofit art museums for large regions. I've started 6 different arts councils and arts kind of organizations, and I also had a venture of being president CEO of a community foundation that I was heavily influencing the development of the arts in the Inland Empire area. And I regard
that is all part of your career and part of who you are. So your art, as it's been developing in the last few decades, hasn't been shown to other people, and that's not your intention now to show it to other people yet.
Eventually, having a long career in the San Diego arts community as an isolated artist that didn't even show, as I left and moved my life into the Coachella Valley, Palm Springs area about 3.5 years ago, I decided to create a couple pop-up shows, non-commercial shows that invited people that knew me more as an art museum director in other ways and celebrate what I had done, but didn't try to sell, didn't try to manifest it anyway. And it is my plan at this point in the future, is that's the big thing I still have to address, is this culmination and fruition of all that activity and storage of art projects to bring it some finality of what my life really stood for and how to ultimately share it. And that will be an evolving process that is important that I go through it, or otherwise I'll feel very incomplete in the sum total of looking back on it. But I'm sure right where I'm supposed to be as far as I'm concerned.
So can we talk a little bit about that pop-up show? And I'd love to hear a little bit about what was in that. I mean, what's odd about, you know, doing this program that I do is we talk about visual art in a audio format. So if you can, I'd love to hear a little bit about what was in that pop-up show.
Well, if you make different kinds of works, doing photography and paintings and installation and site-specific and conceptual at different parts of a 35-year trajectory, you end up having a real mixed bag of expressions that aren't allegiant to anyone other than myself. And that's the way it evolved, and I was happy with the organic evolution that it took without a plan. And after you put in your 10,000 hours, so to speak, you've got a body of work, and then it's how do you contextualize it for audience eyes and for understanding the complexity of different kinds of expressions. So that was what 2016 was about, was getting a Southwestern College. I was provided a very large 5,000-square-foot museum-quality gallery space and created a very dense installation of about 120 artworks that filled the space and interpreted the space. And I've always thought my art is not to be segregated as individual pieces. They're sliced off and sold off, but they're part of this resource, visual, and literary library that I can go into and interpret space and sites as exhibitions. So I'm pulling out a fragment of the total pie, the total body of work, and interpreting site and space and time in the moment as an installation. And I like that notion for the future, that I'll aim towards doing more of those kind of site-specific installations with that total library resource that I've accumulated and have never let go of. I don't give it away. I don't sell it. Just about everything I've ever made is in my possession still. And that,
so visually,
I think, is very powerful.
What was in that pop-up show then? That large
10, 11-foot installed cardboard pieces on a wall with designs on that. Lots of photographs of site-specific artworks that I did at the ocean and in industrial and shopping center kind of parking areas. A lot of work that is kind of conceptual work that I did in my new genres department, MFA program in San Francisco when I was in the 90s. And so it was a mixed bag of visual kind of iconography elements that have found their way into different kinds of materials that I use over that time period that are reoccurring kind of themes. And that's what those two shows were about, and they got quite a sensational response from the community and from the news media that had perceived me as a museum arts director and curator, largely.
The response. What was the response? Because that's what's, of course, interesting, right? Also, how you're an artist that hasn't been in galleries, isn't about to, or have the work for sale or commercialized in any way. How did colleagues and friends and the press react to that?
Well, I was very happy, a very positive response. Because there's great complexity in 35 years of work that was not allegiant to any plans or any gallery kind of partnerships and requirements that force you to kind of unconsciously fall into this repetitive, redundant making of work that keeps reinforcing your identity in the community. I didn't have that. So to me, the challenge and the fun of it was really pulling out things that I think external unknowing eyes will still find some relevance and connection between things, and that the common thread isn't just me, Daniel Foster, but it's actually the visual kind of elements, basic organic shapes and forms and colors that to me, deal with universal timeless kind of visual content versus very dated, time-based, situation-based kind of content. I've always been fascinated with speaking from a third-person point of view, visually or literally, literarily, so that the audience can actually find themselves in it versus this is simply the art of one person walking in the world, you know, and their perception. I tried to take my person out of it. Actually, I would take that away. I actually try to put my full universal timeless spirit into it and make it relatable to anyone, really.
And is that how it was received? What was the comments about it from the press? How did they?
Well, a couple of things. There's the formal response to actually what's on the wall and how it's perceived as talent or communications or having some kind of experience, an experiential kind of approach to the installation of what happens when you first walk in and met with this horror vacuite density of concepts and imagery and color and shapes and materials. Well, how do you make sense of that? So that to me was fun to see the multiplicity of interpretations of audience members, which was intended. I don't intend my installations and my art to have a singularity of interpretation. In fact, that would defy what its purpose is to produce that multiplicity and then that conversation that happens between people ultimately, which I've long thought is the real value of art being shared, is how it brings people together and shares ideas and gets them talking about what's important to them. And so I think this show or these two shows were very successful in that way. And then I had to deal with the reality that I have a brand and an identity as a longtime museum director, curator that knew the arts communities of San Diego or Inland Empire or Southern California. And everybody thought of me as a museum director. And generally, they don't give you much leeway in interpreting you as an artist poet side by side with that separate brand that's been well established for several decades, reinforced in the media continuously. So that's an interesting kind of bifurcation that goes on between the professional brand and identity that you establish in an arts community and then this very isolated individual path as an artist that you've taken that nobody knows about. And as you reveal it, they've got to make sense of this person that they know and the other side of that person that you're now revealing to them. And I think that mystery is very powerful to work with from my point of view.
And since then, have you done more shows like that, or was that the last one?
No, I believe in the holistic integration of your personal life with your professional life and that they're not two separate kinds of paths with their own values and trajectories that you kind of keep separate. That was one of the important decisions I made in my 20s is don't start wearing false masks or produce masks for a different context. Be the person that you are holistically, body, mind, heart, and soul, and bring that to everything that you do, including your professional path and your artistic path. So to me, I kind of see these exhibitions and even the work that I've done professionally in running museums and making curatorial decisions on what's important, what art and ideas and concepts that bring community together to really understand each other a lot better. how do you do that from a very personalized point of view? So to answer your question, about 3.5 years ago, my son relocated with my ex-wife, who I'm very close with and raising him daily, to a new community. And it was a start over for me, which I've gone through a number of times in leaving jobs and areas to follow in the last 15 years or 10 years, my son. And that personal story impacts everything in my life, including what art I make, what activities and arts communities I choose to pursue. And right now I'm in partnership with the state of California on developing an old homestead, 640 acres, into an artist residency program that will launch in about a year. And I've been 3 years in the formative development work of that. So it was an opportunity I didn't see coming. I landed in the Pinyon Crest area, heard about this ranch that changed hands, and made a proposal that I would like to create a nonprofit that will run it in a variety of ways as an arts residency center.
Well, that's exciting. Very exciting. So, I mean, given that in your history and institutions in the arts, I'd love to talk a little bit about art and culture and what you think are opportunities for curators and artists in the 21st century. What do you think we're coming into that is?
I've been a participant in the traditional, conventional museum, gallery, marketplace system, for sure, bestowing validation on artists with solo shows, group shows, things that you put together. They're very creative contextualization acts, I think, of the content that you can work with. I think that is one of the greatest opportunities in the 21st century, is going from the 20th century of art becoming content makers and modernism, postmodernism, blowing the roof off of what can be made in content. But what I don't think has been really addressed and matured is our contextualization of where we find art in our personal work and public spaces. And I still think it's very backwards and kind of dark ages in nibbling at the notion of how art can be this insidious minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour influencer of our daily consciousness versus this segregated activity that you do on a Saturday afternoon, going to a gallery or a Sunday afternoon making a work of art. And, you know, you get a few hours compartmentalized around art, and then another 168, you know, hours in the week that have to be filled with utilitarian practical activities. And I think that's the big issue that faces the art world and artists and curators, is how do we break down the barriers that keep art in these kind of approved venues of where you find art and really good art. And the other part is, I think, this elitist kind of commodification of art that's gone on historically is going to give way to the populist movement of access to really good art that you can live with in your consciousness versus having to have a lot of money to go and find it in some other place than where you live or work. So I think that's a really critical concept that artists in the art world, kind of curators, have to really think about, is what do we do in the contextualization of our contemporary world with content that has been made and is being made? That to me is one of the critical issues really facing art.
So,
and the other
how,
is,
I mean, that,
is the
that's
elitism.
That's such an important issue. You know, that's such an important issue. You know, I talk to a lot of curators in this program. A lot of curators are, you know, talking about similar systems that are you know, perhaps outdated, as you're saying. You know, they're pressured by their institutions to have a certain type of art to appeal to certain social issues, and so you know, they're all speaking oftentimes the same in the same kind of ideas, in the same way of putting together a show and working with artists that are often already known quantities, though there are some exceptions. So your idea sounds very exciting. How would that happen? Are there any examples of that out
well,
there?
Well, yeah, it's going on every day in communities. When you look at public art movements, art in public spaces, you look at how buildings and architects and developers and city planners, urban planners, how they're functioning. And I think this divide between the creative artists in the community and the practical kind of developers of community, that has to be bridged. And I think it's now, there's been a lot of foreground work of the last 50, 60 years going beyond plop art that I think signals the opportunities that are there for artists to be part of collaborative approaches in communities to bring it into public spaces, into work environments, and also break it into the affordability and access to our private lives. Because I think, again, museums, galleries, and the marketplace is largely driven where and how we experience art. And I think that with the internet and the abilities for mass reproduction of art, I think it can be a very popularized, all-inclusive kind of world that we can wake up to, where everywhere we look has intentionality of art being brought into it to humanize and soften the utilitarian world that we go out into.
I love that. I really love the sound of that, and I can almost visualize it. I think you're not alone in that kind of in reaching for that. I'm just wondering, you know, how can that happen? You know, there's different artist-run groups that create prints. There's different kinds of artist collaboratives out there. Is there one that you see that's specifically moving in this direction or not?
No, because I think it has to be a movement in the culture that starts to further its understanding of diversity of lifestyles and peoples in their community. I think that's the problem, is that when you look at how public art is selected and ultimately funded and approved, it's not about diversity of expressions and being tolerant of experimental or unusual approaches. I believe we live in a heterogeneous, very diverse world, and yet in the contextualization of art in public spaces and public art programs, it's kind of the tyranny of the majority ruling on tastes. And it really, you have to understand that, you know, there's 2, 5, 10% of the population that likes things that are not kind of what you might call mainstream or pedestrian as art. And they have a right to be included in a body, in a collection, I would say. Just like any art museum doesn't, you know, hone in on just one thing for one audience on the subject, it really tries to show a diverse spectrum of views. So when you walk into a group show, there might be a few works that you say, I don't like them. I don't like them at all. But that is part of the kind of diversity and tolerance of diversity that's necessary for heterogeneous communities to really kind of operate healthy and well. And so to me, I think the same kind of understanding when you walk into a gallery group show is the same as what you should see when you're driving through the streets of your community and your town. And I also don't think that it just happens that it's a collected, you know, park of outdoor public artworks that you go to, but it's integrated into everything, every street, everything that touches your eyeballs and creates a sense of place. That, to me, there's so much opportunity to for artists to move into those places and engage the structure of our conventional world in what they have to offer. And I tend to think architects and planners, and they are receptive to it if artists learn how to be more collaborative, which is kind of a personality profile of a lot of artists, is they tend to be staunch individualists that don't really want to compromise and collaborate. And that's one of the tricky parts of a collaborative process when you're dealing with public spaces or workspaces.
Right. That's so true. So, it's been fascinating talking to you. I want to ask you one more question about what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I guess it signals back in my mid-20s when I was so steeped in conventional thinking and education and then realized that there's an alternative path, and the path is just to go inward and listen to my soul, listen to my philosophies and core values instinctually. That meant get away from external inputs and influencers, if you've had a lot of it already, and I did. And so I abstained from reading in addition to really external engagement heavily, because my own inner instinctual sense of things hadn't been really followed. And then after years in my adult life of doing that, you start to get very strong about your own inner voice. And then I've been probably the last 10, 15 years is trying to synthesize between this internal journey that was very purist and isolating for a long time and is part of my person, obviously, but then how to synthesize it into how you engage community and not be a dropout completely. And that isn't the goal. And I hope to live another 30 years so that I can actually realize some fruition with these very internalized concepts and share them with the world and engage the world with it. But up to this point, I haven't done it. And actually, I'm extremely happy with the fruits of what I got. It's not end result product fruits. It's the journey that is the fruit. And I'll kind of finish by saying I believe I've studied with Alan Kaprow at UCSD, and one of his core philosophies is if you can point to it and call it art, it's not really art. It's things that are in between and around that kind of commodity of art that's really art. And at its manifestation, kind of macro manifestation, I would say, one should make their life their artwork. Everything that comes out of the activity of art making is simply kind of a micro kind of product of that concept that you should live life in the now, organically evolve, seize opportunities that reveal themselves unexpectedly in front of you. And life will evolve over 20, 30, 40 years into something that I think is so much more than the conventional expected path that we're kind of taught to follow.
It's been a pleasure talking with you. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.